Dearest Lord Christ Jesus in heaven. We're in a new studio, not bad.
L'chaim.
L'chaim. Welcome everybody to the Keith and the Girl Comedy Talk Show. Find us at keithandthegirl.com or on iTunes. This is very exciting.
It's unbelievably exciting. It's so exciting, my nervousness about it hasn't kicked in.
I hear you.
You know, it's like, but I'm such a weirdo that every time I get excited, I'm like, oh yeah, be nervous also.
Well, we're going to play a clip from the 30-hour marathon for you that we just completed. Features the great Dan Mahoney. Keith McNally is in it as well. Keith McNally has feelings. Who knew?
One of the greatest moments of my life.
And Ray DeVito will be part of this. So we'll play that for you. I just wanted to say hi, mention a sponsor real quick. The show is brought to you by All For One Clothing, the brand that gives a voice to homeless shelter dogs. All For One donates a portion of every sale to animal shelters. If you'd like to make a difference in the lives of shelter dogs, visit All For One Clothing, spelled out, allforoneclothing.com. Use code KATG, get 25% off your purchase. And I think this is funny also. We're about to do, you know, coming up, the first official, let's say, live show in this new studio.
Yep, my brother and Lauren will be a part of that.
Your brother, of course, loves when it's all about him, and he's very excited that he's starting things off in the new studio.
It's a big deal. It is.
However, I am in the new studio now.
You're an asshole.
You see what I'm saying?
Yes,
I
do.
I'm talking without him. So kinda he was. All right, here's the clip from the 2011 30-hour marathon. I think you guys will enjoy it.
I don't know, Dan, if you know, Keith McNally is from...
Canadian.
He's Canadian. Oh, you guys were hanging out?
We were hanging out, and he missed my joke. He's like, I live in Toronto. I'm like, oh, I live in southern Toronto. Buffalo. Nothing. Crickets.
Yeah,
no, everybody looked at me.
He won't give it to you if
nothing.
It's not. No, if it's
no,
if it's
nothing
just,
there.
I just didn't get it.
It was.
No, but then I said I'm from Toronto, so Dan's like, oh, did you work such and such a club? You ever been there? And I was like, I'm just a dude, man.
Hey, are you are you a hockey fan as a Canadian?
No, I fucking can't stand fuck that.
When I was
keep that's, trying. That's you like this? No, man. But I love Canada.
I was up in Ottawa and I'm like, this is gonna be great. I'm going to eat back bacon, and I'm going to learn to go curling. I'm going to have somebody take me curling. You ever been curling?
No.
No one has. Do you know it's the Canadian national sport? Actually, that's not true. It's lacrosse. Did you know this?
Yeah, sure, man.
I know a lot about Canada. You know that it's a maple leaf on your flag? Did you know that that's what it is?
Dan, you're going it the wrong way. Here, let me help you out. Right, help me out. How's the coffee up there?
Tim Hortons.
Yeah. Oh, fuck phenomenal. Yeah. I saw a Tim Hortons. The only picture I took phenomenal. All day today in New York was I saw the Tim Hortons at Times Square.
Herald Square.
Yeah, sure.
It's amazing. I was so excited when it arrived. Favorite donut?
I don't know. I guess the Boston cream, but the donuts aren't the best. I don't know.
I'm going to go with peanut crunch. Mm. It's like take crunchy peanut butter, but you take the crunches and you put it on like a glazed donut. That's covered awesome. In crunchy peanuts.
You know what I learned, though, about I learned a lot about Canada from living in the States, because I just took Canada for granted. I thought we were the same. But listeners of Keith and the Girl who remember 2008 might remember me as the little bitch who hated New York and just complained all the time. And I kind of started to realize what was going on there. It's because I live in Toronto now, and everybody I asked was like, don't move to Toronto. You're going to hate it. It's huge. It's noisy. It's shitty. If you hate New York, you'll hate Toronto. But I moved to Toronto, and I love it. It's fantastic. So I started Wikipedia looking up shit. I looked up the biggest cities in the world, and Toronto's not in the top 20.
Really?
And that's our biggest city, and everyone in Canada can't handle it, and it's nothing. It's tiny. So I mean,
I've heard this. Canadians, as a whole, hate Toronto. Unless you live in Toronto, they don't like Toronto.
No, they hate it. So, I mean, I was kind of done from the beginning. I mean, I'm bred in this place where we can't even handle Toronto. I thought I could come to New York and fit in. So I just felt like an antibody all the time, like this place was trying to attack me, and it's not. I can't.
He came to New York very excited because he would visit. You know, we'd have some stuff, and he'd come visit for, like, maybe a few days, tops maybe 10 days, I think. Anyway, so he moved here, learned that he actually likes Canada, went back and did a fuck you New York podcast.
Yeah,
really?
I sure did.
How do you feel about it now?
Oh, I hate it. As soon as I got back to New York, I just instantly hated being here.
But you were so excited to come, even though you hated it.
Yeah, well, see, that's the thing. I had to come say goodbye to the studio for sure. And so I got here and I was like, oh, I remember why I hate this place. I fucking hate it. Then I got back to the old neighborhood that I used to live in. in Flushing. And I was like, all right, yeah, this is a nice little neighborhood. I had some good times here. It's starting to come back. Went back to the old apartment, and it's just fucked up. It's the one me and Relic used to live in. It's like I was in, like in a fairy tale when the little kid grows up and goes back to the magical land, and it's fucking nothing. It's just like a tire swing, and he thought it was something special. Because Brenkin's the only one still there. People just keep leaving. So thankfully, Brenkin's still there. And it's really just falling apart. Like, you could tell that, like, me and Relic weren't the most clean freak people in the world, but we were way better off than, I don't know, like, 21-year-old rocker Kyle Thompson or whoever the fuck, right? Because it's just, yeah, it just looks like a tornado went through there. There's, like, crumpled up cigarette packs in the corner.
What do you hate most about, like, what do you, I feel like being in New York?
Here, I got a fun game. You tell me why I might hate New York. I'm tired of this. You tell me. You know.
You know, this is my take. And again, I'm 3 years in. It's a struggle.
Oh, yeah. Where are you from?
Buffalo, New York.
Oh,
and New
so
Yorkers
different.
Don't claim me. It's I know. I'm Midwest. No. I'm too nice. Whatever. But New York, it's such a struggle to be, to stay, to thrive. And, like, there's a love-hate thing that goes on. People hate. You have to hate it a little
bit
to love
like
it.
You like
it. I love it.
You love it.
But I hate it. Part of it makes me, you know, there's
why do you sound so New Yorker? You're from Buffalo.
Because, oh, I have no idea about that. I don't know. I probably don't. I still have a lot of hope. That, like, literally, that discludes me from really, truly fitting. But slowly as the days go on, you slowly slide the bathrobe on and let the shave come in and you're losing hope. That's what, but mm-hmm. It's kind of, you have to hate it a little bit, I feel.
I get the love hate. Do you mean like the people? A lot of assholes.
A lot of assholes.
Tough to get jobs. Tough to get a decent apartment because you have everybody wants a piece of this pie. So it's harder than most places. It's not just that things are more expensive. It is, you know, you make it here, you make it anywhere.
You make it where you got to want it. Anything you do. You bring it up tenfold when you come to New York City.
Right.
But whatever it is.
Let's say, okay, I've never lived anywhere else, really. I mean, I got here when I was 4, so I never tried to get a job anywhere else. I never tried to do anything, really, as an adult anywhere else. So let's say getting a job is harder here. What job are you getting there that is easier? I only know Keith, really.
There's less people. There's less people fighting for the job.
But you didn't like any of your jobs anywhere else.
Well, that doesn't mean I liked being a waiter in New York.
But I would say that the stakes are higher being a waiter in New York. Fridays. Let's say I'm waiting tables at Fridays. The stakes are higher Times Square than it is in Ashtabula, Pennsylvania. Mm-hmm. It's a different animal. New York is a different animal in every facet of life.
Would you move, Keith?
After I felt I conquered New York.
Wait. Exactly.
And what is
exactly.
Conquering New York?
I don't know, but you know it when it happens. You know when you're some of those buildings that you pass, you're allowed in them now.
So you don't want to live here.
The red
then.
Velvet ropes are opened and...
So you don't want to live here.
Possibly living in the city for a couple years, but then I can see going, all right, I defeated this town.
Sure.
Now maybe I get to go to...
Now it's time for some land.
Yeah, now it's time for a little land. Now I'll go to Monterey, California.
Till my fields.
Right.
See, it was similar for me, except I knew it defeated me. You know, like right. There was a point where there was just no question. I was just not having any fun anymore. So it's like, yeah, let's just like, hey, here we are.
I think what would be cool, since we are podcasters, is to skip winter in New York. You know, like to eventually have a system that could, I know people are going to write in, here's a system that you can have, it's so easy, blah, blah, blah. We have a kick-ass system. We don't want to do, you know, something on a computer, you know, a laptop, whatever. And we have done remote shows, but it'd be cool to go somewhere sunny for 3 months.
You'd lose your edge.
For 3 months?
I've lived.
Look at me, Dan. Look at me.
I will tell you this. I've lived in Florida. No offense to Floridians, but I lived in Florida, coming from New York, a cold weather climate where you suffer in the winter. That's where you gain your edge. So I was down in Florida for 2 years, no repercussions, only one wardrobe. That's it. That's all you need. You need one wardrobe. That's it. And you lose your edge. You get soft in the melon. That's what happens.
3 months there out of the year.
I'm telling you. There's no consequences. There's no change up. There's no, you know, like... In New York in the winter, you bear down. No one can see me, but like I'm crouching over. You have to like curl up, button up, and grit up.
I think there's enough grit here for the rest of the year. that can...
I agree. I would be okay with the show getting soft for 3 months. You get soft? Don't worry about it.
You're going to soften up.
I think you can find something curmudgeon-y about anywhere. But we don't have to be... See, the thing is, I don't think the show is about being a curmudgeon. I don't think the show is about, you know, Edge of New York as... Well, maybe it's a little bit, but I don't think that we can go somewhere like, you know, somewhere nice, let's say in California or something, and then lose everything. I think that would be interesting. I think we'd find something else to say. No? McNally, you hate New York, but you listen to the show... Do you think if we move somewhere, it'd be different?
I think you and Keith are such strong personalities that you're good. You could be anywhere. I don't think New York is what made you guys what you are at all. I really think you're just one in a million people that, yeah, I don't think, I think people give New York too much credit, you know? It's just a place. It's just numbers. It's just that there's a lot of people here, so more stuff happens here, so more people come out of it. But it's, I think people that credit New York for their artistic shit is just... Plus, oh man, you know, I really gotta say, I was so disappointed with the art scene in New York. It's like, I'm putting up with all this bullshit so I can go see a bunch of bullshit to see all these, I don't know, it's just...
Well, that's a thing, I think that's a problem in New York, that there's so many levels of art, you know, and I'm talking about comedy, dance, whatever, that it's scary to buy a ticket to something because you could be spending a little bit of money and get this incredible show, or you could spend a lot of money and feel like your money just went down the drain. And so I think for artists, as much as artists want to come here and thrive, and this is the place to do it in, you know, here in LA, you still get shat upon. You know, how hard do you work, Dan, to make people to come to your free show every week?
Every Wednesday, free
show.
It's free.
How hard do you work all week in order to get the word out, in order to, you know, make incentives? You know, here the appetizers are half price, I know, at your show. The drinks are on drink special. And you have to you have Paulina helping you promote the show. Why do you need an extra person to promote a show when the show is free? And that's the problem. There's so much talent here, but there's so much shit. And there's a lot of people making comedy look bad. There's a lot of people making dance look bad. Any artistic anything, there's a lot of shit. And so you got to comb through it. And then once, I don't know, maybe that's why people hold on to their artist more. Maybe that's why people look to bigger acts. You know, maybe like you don't want to see the up-and-comers because, you know, maybe you want somebody else to filter through.
But I do believe that talent rises to the top. And
not always.
If you have a bigger pool to sift through, I think it forces people to be better and be more honest.
Do you think if you don't make it, if in 20 years you don't make it, you'd go, it's because I didn't have talent? Do you think that only talent is at the top right now? Right now,
no.
The people who are making $10 million per movie is only the top?
No.
Or do you think
that
in a nook on New York City or in other cities or in other, you know, anywhere around, you know, it doesn't have to even be a city. Don't you think that you can find a way more talented person but maybe just doesn't have the push or the selling that you have to do of yourself?
I think that you just hit the nail on the head there.
You have to be a salesperson.
Yeah.
And most people are not who have the artistic gene.
Well, no, I think a lot of people are considered in much better light with lacking that. You know, they don't have like the whole package, and they can hide in certain scenes in art in the city.
So
but it forces people like, what do you want to do? Do you want to do this for the rest of your life and make money at it and like, you know, live? Then you have to get a little more creative than I think what people are doing.
Well, you don't have to. The thing is if it was that you had to get more creative with your actual art, that would make sense. But I think that we're getting to a point where you have to get more creative on your business end than on your artistic end. We can be artistic all we want. Nobody's getting discovered in, you know, a little talent show as much as they used to or anymore at all. Nobody's getting discovered singing a jingle, you know, or at some random karaoke or a talent show somewhere. They're getting discovered because they have 10 million YouTube hits. They're getting discovered because they're the best salesperson of their show or the best PR person for themselves. So you can be actually a shitty artist making shitty things. You can be a good salesperson.
Do you remember, Hemda? This is when I first moved here. It was me, Relic, you, and Brolo, if I remember right. We went to see a bunch of stand-ups, and it's on the Keith and Girl YouTube page. I interviewed some people out front. And, well, that's where it kind of clicked into me, that we saw like 12 or 13 comedians, and two or three of them were good, but each one of them had two or three friends, and it was just a room full of people playing to each other, like to nobody. And it was just like crazy. I'm like, what is even happening here? How does this make any sense?
That happens a lot.
But
it's an incestuous scene.
I'm not defending New York. I'm not convincing you. Okay? Get out. Make it easier. Right. We already said there's too many people.
Rent is high enough.
Right. But you did not explore New York. Am I wrong? When you talk about the art shows you saw,
right,
you would have tagged along to it where one of your friends went. Well, you're not into it. So you're not going to be into it next week. You're not going to be into this Lower East Side scene where art to them is shitting out a literal egg. Right. You know, that's not for you. So you got to find something else, you know? It's a big fucking city.
But that's what I like city. About the city is part of it, I like the sifting through. I like that you can find these nooks and find, like, all of a sudden for $5, I just saw the best show. And, you know, who knows if they'll make it or not make it. But that was really cool. But on another night, it's like a $5 show that's like, total womp womp. But I'm still happy to be out. Sure. And I still talked to a couple of people that were interesting that have a story. And, you know, like I said, I didn't live anywhere else. And McNally, I think about your points a lot. I didn't live anywhere else. And so how would I know?
That reminds me, it was one of the last nights before I went home. A firefighter chick was here because she's who I got a ride home with. And I always felt bad about this because I'm in Hemda's house, this very house, and, you know, I'm a guest in her home. And I always said so many just asshole things where I was...
I'm not going to deny that.
Yeah, where firefighter chick, her name is Amy, and she was talking about, like, East Coast Canada. She's from Nova Scotia and what it's like and how nice it is and how different it is from here. And, you know, she was talking with Hemda a bit. And that's when I said, like, yeah, but Hemda... You lived in Israel. You moved here. You've never lived anywhere nice. And then a beat. And then it's like, I'm a guest in her home. What is the matter with me? You know? Why would I say that?
But see, I still think New York is nice. And yeah. And again, like just like Keith, I'm not going to convince you. I'm not going to convince anyone that New York is nice. I feel at home. The oddest thing, when I was 4 years old, I moved here. I was sick my entire life for all 4 years. My mom said I moved here on the plane. She had to give me antibiotics for the shit that was going on. Just I was a very sickly kid. I got here. I stopped being sick. And I'm not saying like, oh, New York is so magical and wonderful and America is the homeland and blah, blah, blah.
Well, there's mold everywhere and garbage. So the penicillin is in the air.
Keeps you healthy.
Yeah.
I feel at home here. Maybe that'll change when I get older. Somebody just feedback, you know, Brolo and Keith and I went to California 1 year and they're like, oh, wouldn't it be great to move here for this and that and whatever. And I'm like, you guys are on vacation. Of course you want to move. I think I feel a little more like that. 3 months out of the year, let's get out of the cold. Let's explore something else. It's the first time I've really discovered that. I think part of it is McNally talking about, hey, you never lived anywhere else. So I started thinking about living in other places. Now, I'm not going to move to Middle America because I don't think I can do, just like you said, Toronto is the biggest city in Canada, but it's not in the top 20, and you thought you would move to New York. I can't move from the biggest city to the middle of nowhere. With ignorance in mind, I still don't think I can do it because I think that would be too much of a change.
You know, my friend Julio, I think you guys met him, Julio from New York,
yeah.
But he was like the opposite of me where he lived outside of New York for like 15 years and was just kind of miserable all the time and started getting allergies because of all the pollen and crap. He just moved back last year and just is like happy as a pig in shit again. You know, he just loves it here. And so I guess that's what I'm starting to realize is like I was just being way too hard on the city. Like it's the city's fault. Like this city is out to get me. But it's just some people are just made for different things, man. I'm just, you know. But
I've lived so many different places that ramped me up to be living here now.
Oh, so you didn't make a sudden change.
I've lived in Montana. I've lived in Utah. I've lived in Florida, Boston. Lived all over this country, and you finally arrive in New York City. Where do you go from here? Where do you move from? What's
Shanghai?
The next step? That's Shanghai? Space. I have space in my life. That's where I could go. Where are you going next, Tammo? Space. Because that's the only thing that's left. It's space.
Remember the potential intern we talked about? Nice guy. I brought him up thinking it was just funny that I understand we curse on this show, but and we've mentioned this before with people. We met him. It's like, how you doing? I'm doing fucking great. And do you want to? I just got a fucking coffee at Starbucks. But if you want to go somewhere fucking else, like if you want fucking breakfast, they got fucking eggs over here. It's like, all right, you won't be in charge of the phone. You know. But anyway, if you're wondering, like we haven't talked to him lately. He left New York.
Yeah.
And how fast was that? Why? He goes, New York won. And you can't help it by going, All right.
You just know when it happens, man. If I wasn't dating Ian, that's the reason I stayed. I was here like a year and 4 months.
Right.
I would have left probably whenever the Keith and the Girl cruise was. I think at that point I'd been here 6 or 7 months.
Yeah.
That was plenty. You know, like I knew I was done. I was just holding on to this
What happened
relationship.
With you and Ian? Well, you just called it a silly relationship, so we might know the direction it's
going.
Yeah,
I mean, I don't mean I don't mean to say that she is silly. No, the relationship was. We just weren't. We never really. We're very super different people, and to me, that was the whole draw. Is like, wow, this chick is so cool and so like much. I don't know. Just seemed unattainable. So when I attained her, I was like, fuck yeah. But that story did have, I think, a happy ending where we kept in touch a bit after I went back to Canada, and then she came to Montreal to visit me. I went to Montreal and she also, and we hung out for like a week.
You stick it in?
Well, happy Montreal ending. Is named after Mont Royal. That's French for this one mountain. That's what Montreal means. So we went to the top of Mont Royal and I got a blowjob on Mont Royal.
Yeah.
Over Montreal. And then, you know, then we fell out of touch. But I think that's a pretty, oh, no, this isn't even better.
A great way to close it out.
Even better.
You really thought, didn't you think? For a second, you get confused. McNally's a human being. And you were like, he grew from the relationship. No pun. But hey. Good story. I learned how to become a better adult. No, there's a good story to this relationship. I got a blowjob on the highest mountain. Yeah.
Those bios you were reading on the page, mine is McNally, learner of
that
no life
amazing.
Lessons whatsoever.
Got a topographical map. You were the highest point in Montreal that night.
No, there was a better. There was a better day than that in Montreal, I just remembered, where they have this international fireworks festival in the summer where different countries have crazy fireworks displays. We were banging in the hotel room. We look out the window. Australia's like world-class fucking fireworks display is going off. So we finish up and then go out and watch fireworks. That was fucking...
That's nice.
So good.
That's sweet.
Now we don't talk anymore, but hey.
Did it just trickle out?
Yeah, we were Skyping and stuff, and yeah, it's just like, hey, I live here, you live there, and we're really just really different people. I mean, you guys knew her, right?
Like, well, you guys had a lot in common. I'm not saying that you belong together at all.
Penis in a vagina? Sure.
No, like, I don't know.
Guys
have a lot of music, books in common. Like,
I suppose,
certain thoughts. You know, artistic views, things like that. I mean, that's a huge deal, especially because you both liked semi-obscure things that you had in common. I thought that was kind of a big deal, and I think that's what attracted you to her as well. So.
I'm definitely glad I met her. I mean, it was awesome. You know, I'm glad that whole relationship happened, but the long term of it would have never worked. So
kind of weird hanging on to the Skype thing too, as you guys are like fading into friend zone.
There's nothing dumber than
some dude in the background walking around. You're like,
well, I remember when I
let you go
when I left New York after I'd been here like all this time, and then some friends from Halifax gave me a ride back there, and I was Skyping with her my first day back in Canada, and we got in like this 20-minute like semi argument, and at some point I'm just like, what the fuck am I still doing this for? I'm wow. talking to a computer here. Yeah. Like, what the fuck?
You know? Closing your screen. You know what?
Close the screen.
I'm thousands of miles away. Like, what is
How do you
happening?
Feel about that?
But it's kind of like Dan. It's kind of like what Dan was saying when you're talking to the chick and you're like, all right, and you've been there before, so you go to take your hog out. She goes, okay, I'll let you go. I was like, well, that's the whole point of all this. You know it's over.
Totally. Well, why are we Skyping?
Right.
Come on. Aren't we here to show each other junk? All right, speaking of ladyboys.
I hear you. Dan Mahoney's going to go get some.
I am.
Dan Mahoney, let people know where they can find you.
Every Wednesday, haiku, except for tomorrow. We're all going to go to Sacapuntas, not me.
Yay.
I'll be at my house, come on. But every Wednesday... Ray will be there the next Wednesday. Come on down. And where can you find me? I don't know.
What's your website?
Ask around.
Facebook.
I don't know why.
Some people. Listen, I'm not leaving New York. I don't care what you do to me, New York. I'm not leaving, all right? I'm officer and a gentleman in your ass. I got nowhere else to go.
See, that's the fucking, that's the attitude you need.
That's it.
That's the one.
You know what? They hate me. New York is fucking, they hate me. I'm sticking, so.
You rewind a little bit back. I bust my ass every week trying to get people to this show. Where's your show at? I don't know.
Listen,
I do a show.
Listen, well, I don't want to step on. You know, there's competing shows.
Doesn't matter. You're on right now, and you're on every week.
Every Wednesday, 1 and 1, First and First, the Nexus of the Universe, 76 East First Street, downstairs in the Nexus Lounge. Come on up.
All right.
Awesome.
Thanks,
and,
guys.
And you're on Facebook, Dan Mahoney. It's spelled
MAHONEY1. Mahoney1. Learned that from you, actually.
Facebook.com/Mahoney1.
Thank
you so much for coming.
Thank you.
Nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you.
All right.
You know, that's a weird thing where I ended up being on this show so many times that year, like, I don't know, 30 times or something, right? That I was at, you know, one of the Bowery Poetry Club nights with, and there was some guy there who was like, I know that guy. Who is that guy? And somebody had to remind me later I was on the show with him once. He was this weird hippie dude that you guys ended up not asking back. And I think you just, you know, were like, hey, I don't know about this guy, McNally. You want to be on in case, you know, back this dude up? So all night I was like, who the hell is that guy? Yeah. I still don't know. I still don't remember.
We don't miss him.
Well, Lauren Hennessy just came on like, hello.
Hello.
And you moved to New York. Have you felt beat down by it?
Fuck yes, absolutely.
And she comes from Hawaii, which, I mean, if you're going to talk about the opposite, Christ almighty.
It's the complete opposite, and that's one of the reasons why I really wanted to move here. Because Maui, although it's like part of my heart, and it's awesome, and I'm really happy I grew up there, it was my Alcatraz. Like, seriously.
You felt trapped?
Absolutely. I mean, well, I grew up... gay, essentially, on an island that's fairly conservative. It's a little bit more...
Conservative? They dance like fruits daily.
Dance like fruits?
Don't they? They have their luau's. They're skipping around.
What's a luau?
Isn't there a luau?
I'm just kidding.
Did you ever notice
that? Yeah, I know. In fact, in Hawaii, I think that... Hawaii.
Yeah, we pronounce every Hawaiian word wrong. Already Maui.
Yeah, I thought it was Laua.
You know what? I thought she was sort of exaggerating the thing. I go over there, nobody says Hawaii, and nobody says Maui. They all say Maui, and they all say Hawaii. And then I found myself starting to say it.
Yeah, I'm proud of you.
It's and then I learned why, because if there's two letters that are like, you know, there's two I's right there back to back next to each other,
then those letters are having homosexual sex. That is a sick place.
Exactly. And that constitutes a glottal stop, which is the ee.
I had a friend from Japan, and in Japan they call their country Nippon. So I asked him, why do we call it Japan? And he's like, you tell me. I don't know.
Yeah, the same. I guess it's the same. I've never heard of that. But.
I don't know, but I think, you know, in Israel it's tchina, and here it's tahini. I'm not going to argue with people. The English word for tchina becomes tahini here. That means I have to say tahini, or, you know, I have to explain, oh, no, I'm Israeli, you know?
You know,
it's
when
just the way it is. I don't. It took me a while to get used to it, because tahini isn't what it is, but I'm not speaking Hebrew here.
When I first moved to Astoria, it's all Greek there. This is similar to your story. And I went into a gyro place, which essentially is a piece of pita bread with some meat in it and veggies.
Gyro.
Exactly. And I ordered a gyro, which is
how
essentially
they pronounce it.
G-Y-R-O. Right. That's how it's pronounced and whatever. And they gave me a gyro, which is a sandwich with... like French bread and shit and ketchup. And so I say gyro now every time is the point of that story. Anyway,
it wasn't just bread with like shit in it. And they're like, what? That's what you ordered.
It was like a Subway sandwich. Right. It's a gyro, you know, it's a sandwich. And, but I wanted a gyro, but nobody says that. So now I say gyro from now on. But, in Hawaii, more the male, if you're a male homosexual, or transgendered female or anything like that, it's more accepted. If you're born with a penis and you're gay or transgender or whatever, it's more accepted. But if you're a female, it's not as accepted, especially if you're a white female.
You know what I thought you meant?
It's kind of bizarre.
I thought you meant if you're transgendered, they accept your mispronunciations better for a second. Like, that can't be what she
that
means.
That too. Then you can say gyro, and everybody knows what you're talking about.
I don't think the way they pronounce things is my biggest problem with them.
It's kind of bizarre, though. So, I don't know. It was a tough time growing up there. But, you know, I always knew that I was an actor, and that's what I wanted to do. And my whole goal since I was three is to win a Tony. And so that's what I'm here for. And I've wanted to live in New York anyway.
Did you hate it at first?
No. I loved it. I got off the plane, and I spent the first week here, and I was like, I'm home. And I feel that...
Meanwhile, she got mugged three times.
Yeah.
Yeah, since she's been here. And
yeah, three times.
A bunch of shit has happened. She
a lot of shit.
Cackled all the time. It's very much not the same. But you go back to Hawaii, and I did notice this. she grew up there, but because she looks like what she looks like, everyone treats her like she's a tourist. But she knows more than a lot of people over there where the little nooks and crannies are.
What do you mean what she looks like?
She's a white girl that never tans, and people are brown there.
I can't tan, and that, believe me, I've tried. And I've also tried to be straight, and neither work.
You know, though, as far as getting mugged, like, that's when you know it's love. Because, I mean, people have brought up to me how they're like, hey, isn't it in Canada you got bear maced, and isn't it in Canada your house burned down? And I'm like, yeah, but they didn't mean it, you know.
It's New York. It's the love. I'm a local now. Actually, the first time I got mugged, someone, I had a phone in my hand, and I was walking my dog Henry with the other hand, and someone just came up and grabbed it out of my hand as I'm talking on the phone with my mom. And I thought it was one of my buddies.
Nice
it was
friends.
On the Upper East Side. And I look back, and this guy's halfway down the block with my phone running down the street. The second time, a guy came up to me and simply said, give me your bag. And I was like, okay. And I gave it to him, because I was always taught by my father, you know, just if someone asks you for something, just give it to him. It's better than being shot in the head. And the third time was when I knew you guys, and you were bartending at the Blue Room, and I was.
It was my first time bartending. I was guest bartending in one of the bars that Lauren worked, and she was going to be with me to, like, teach me what's happening behind the bar. She's so late. She's not picking up my phone call. Nothing's happening.
Yeah. Well, we were filming earlier for a friend of mine, Isolde, who edited your...
Edited Keith's last... Filmed and put together the last DVD.
So we were working together throughout the day. We went back up at her house, had a little dinner, and then I left. And I took the train about a stop or two. I was in Harlem, and the train stops. I get off. The train is standing there. It stopped. Everyone had to get off of the train, and the train is sitting there for a good 10 minutes. And I'm talking to this guy because he asked me for directions, like, oh, where? How do we get to this place or that place or whatever? And I'm trying to tell him which train to take. And so he walks away, and then I get knocked down, and my bag is taken and strewn all about, and he's taken my bag, the guy I was talking to, and he runs down the platform in the subway. And I fucking got up and started running after him. Like, I just blacked out at the moment. I was like, fuck. And I start running after him. And then someone else knocked me down, which I think was an undercover cop, and chased after him and grabbed this guy. And, oh, no.
Grabbed
this
the guy, first guy.
Grabbed the first guy. He got knocked onto the train tracks, onto the subway train tracks. And there's this huge thing in New York, like, if you touch the third rail, you'll get electrocuted, right? Which I think is kind of a myth, unless you piss on it.
And it has to be a steady flow.
Exactly, yeah. And this woman starts yelling, oh, he's going to hit the third rail! He's going to hit the third rail! And a couple guys pulled him back up from the tracks and arrested him, and then arrested me, pushed me up against one of those steel poles in the platform, pushed me up against it, arrested me, took me into the little police stations they have on the platforms in the subways in New York, and questioned me for a good hour about some drug trafficking bullshit and this guy. And apparently someone saw me talking to him and said, I think she's with him. And so they thought I was involved, and all these cops flowed in from both sides.
Your phone was dead.
My phone had died by then. And I was just like, please, can I just make a phone call to someone? I'm supposed to be meeting somebody. And they're like, you can make a phone call, you know, when you're in prison or whatever the fuck. And they questioned me for a good hour. So I had to fill out all this paperwork. I didn't even know this guy. They connected me with this drug deal or whatever is going on.
But let me tell you what a kick-ass bartender I was that night.
Yeah. So anyway, so I end up, they end up figuring, okay, I'm okay. They let me go. They still wouldn't let me use their phone. Even after they were letting me go, they wouldn't. I asked for a ride to the bar where you were bartending. They wouldn't give me a ride. So I hopped in a cab. I had no money. I ended up borrowing $20 from Polina once I got there to pay the cabbie. And it was just messed up. But I love New York.
I love New York.
It's the two extremes balance me out.
So I don't know if we're too early into the marathon. This would be the best for, like, right at the end. But anybody in the mood for, like, a very special KTG moment? Can you still write me in for most tender?
Let's see what happens.
All right. So I get to New York, and I'm at my old apartment, right? The one that is just a ruined wasteland now with Brinken alone sitting there at a laptop. And I'm like, what has happened here? And, so basically...
It's like it was a frat house to you, so to speak, where you left. You expected the party to still be going on. You come back. You're finding cigarette butts all over the place. You're finding one guy by himself. You're like, this isn't the party that I started.
Yeah, it's like what used to be here. It's not the same anymore. And like, well, the whole reason I came down for this marathon is because the idea that I would never see this studio again and I would just remember it. It's like, I got to see it, again. See, I'm already.
Oh, my God.
Vamp. Fill time. Give me a sec.
Wow. That's pretty amazing. That McNally has feelings.
How many years did it take to find this?
Wow. This is awesome. I'm sorry, but like a nice awesome. Whew. See, this is what I'm wondering.
How many hours we got? It's going to take me a while.
Well, I'm wondering when we pack up, we're packing on Thursday and Friday, and when we move on Saturday, am I going to start feeling this? This place holds like crazy amount of history for me. I lived here with my entire family. I lived here with Keith and a roommate. I lived here with Keith and a podcast. I lived with my ex for 2 years. I've, all the support of people coming. There's two people from Canada in the room right now. People scheduled at 2 a.m. to come in to be a part of this. That's a huge deal. Somebody just got a L'chaim tattooed your name on them and our character thing. I mean, that's wow, And I'm wondering when this will kick in where it's like, am I going to cry while I'm packing? Am I going to cry when we move? Are we just working our way through the emotion so it's not going to really hit so much until maybe a month later? Like, wait a minute. We don't work here anymore. You know what I mean? Because I'm staying to live here. I'm going to sell the house, but I got to stay in it until I can sell it. So is it going to suddenly feel empty with I have an entire room to myself that's going to be completely empty. And we're moving from one bedroom into an apartment. We're moving this into an entire apartment where it didn't dawn on me. We were doing this from a bedroom this whole time. This whole time.
It's pretty fucking incredible what you guys have done here. And it's really fucking exciting to think about what you're going to do next.
What's exciting is we didn't settle on the new place. I saw a couple of places where I came back to Keith and I go, we can move things around, maybe tear down a wall, or maybe we can make this work. And then we both went together to see places, and we just walked in, and we both were like, yeah. And I didn't think that kind of shit happens, But we were like, this is awesome. Everything's awesome. And the texts that I've been getting, the phone calls that I've been getting through Keith while we're setting up the other place, we visit the studio, we take measurements, we're not always doing that together. He goes in and he goes, man, it feels good. Like, when we came back from vacation, he went there first and he's like, yeah, this is great. Yeah, it's a big deal. We found our place. And this morning he woke up extra early. He's like, it's kind of easy to be jazzed around here,
It is. It is a thing that I really like about New York, just the vibe and the energy. And a place that's more busy. It's like everybody's up and at them early and it helps wake you up. And it's not as... I don't know.
Bogged down and tedious and time consuming.
Something like that.
Well, I feel honored. I'm a newbie to the KATG clan. I feel honored to have witnessed this part of your journey and your careers and your building of this incredible talk show that is just gonna grow and grow.
Nah, come on. Back to you, McNally. You were crying?
Yeah. I was going to say, I was kind of testing people out downstairs to see if anyone else was as sappy as me. Like, I mentioned it to Keith, like, look, there's Rock'em Sock'em Robots. Like, remember all the good times? And right. Keith's like, yeah, I think I'll be good. But who I kind of got was Adam Brown. I mentioned it to Adam Brown, and he's like, yeah, it's kind of fucked. Like, we'll never be here again. Like, here's the patio where I'd stand and smoke, and I always wished I could see a car crash, and a car never crashed.
He's such a sentimental.
In his own way. In his own way, though. Yeah, he did kind of, he's just like, yeah, it's fucked. Like, we'll never be back here, you know? And, I mean, Keith and the Girl was just such a huge part of the whole second half of my 20s, you know? Like, in...
Hey. Let it out. It feels good. You're about to feel. Right. You ready for this? Did between this house and you know, the clown house and Bridget in the Squares playing, were you crying? Were you tearing up? Did I really see that?
I knew he would like Bridget in the Squares. Are they not awesome?
It was before I even got in the house, just walking from the old apartment to here. And at the time, I was like, look at all these jerk-offs and their yarmulkes. It's like pod people, you know? Like, all my old thoughts of just like, yeah, I hate this neighborhood. I hate all this shit. But then as I got to where you guys live, and it's, like, impossible to find this place. Every building looks the same. You got to know exactly what landmarks to look for. But
I'm going to miss that.
Yeah, but I
just
here.
Figured it out, and I'm upset I'm leaving. Yeah, no. That's what bothers me the most. Yeah. I know my way around now.
Who are you kidding? No, you don't.
But, yeah, it's like, now I know. I know all this stuff. I know where to walk, and I, like, there's where we had all the king of everything patio parties and all this stuff.
Let me tell you, McNally, it's going to be a lot easier to find.
Yeah. But that's part of it. Is that I will never be back to this part of Queens, ever. There's no reason to. So, like, this is the last time.
Have a trigger.
So,
have an energy drink.
Actually, yeah, I pulled the trigger about an hour ago.
That'll do it.
I had to stand outside your front door, your door, just to get the lump out of my throat before I came inside.
Oh, my God.
And then Bridget in the goddamn Squares with their, oh, this isn't a sad song. This song about leprosy. This is a happy song. It's not a fucking happy song, Bridget.
Did you look at the lyrics?
It's not even remotely happy. So... So being just on the brink and then just seeing Kyle play, and I never met the Bridget girl, Laura, before till tonight, but just this beautiful moment in this place, and knowing that I'll only ever be able to remember it. I'll never see it again.
Do you know that I was in that very chair that you're sitting in not 2 weeks ago, jerking off, and you'll never be here again.
See, that's the thing. If the marathon had kicked off with dick jokes, I think I would have been fine. It's no good Bridget in the Squares going on tour next week.
Wow, Moody, you came right in at the right time with a name like Moody. Oh, my God.
But, yeah, I mean, just the quick recap.
Well.
I mean, I first found Keith and the Girl in 2005, I guess. And then there was that stand-up contest.
Right.
We're open for Keith. I was the first guy to be able to do that.
Yep.
And then the year after that, I did a bonus feature for a DVD.
Uh-huh.
So I learned how to do video editing. And then I moved here and lived here for the whole year. Like, just...
This whole time, I thought you hated me.
Well, even that. I just feel like... It's just nerd defensiveness, you know? It's like, okay, now I'm here in New York. I'm hanging out with Keith and Hemda. But hey, it's no big thing. Whatever. I'm going to be half an asshole. Fuck this. And... And I guess that's the thing. Now that it's... I mean, I know the show is going to keep going in the new studio, but for me, it's never going to be this again. And it just made me realize how important it was. And just any...
Well, thanks, man.
Any...
No, I mean it.
You know what? This is a very big deal, and it, you know, a lot... You do cover up a lot of that stuff, and so
give me your strength, DeVito.
To know that McNally...
Oh, I'm numb. My name's Ray, and I'm numb.
Well, even that.
Dude, you're on the same emotional level as I am, so don't.
My house burned down earlier this year, and if I was just a normal guy, it would have just been something I just had to deal with, like everybody does. But because of Keith and the Girl, I got like $1,400 in donations, and then that's when I came to the live show the last April 15th, and during the live show, I just remember Keith saying, like, hey, McNally, glad you didn't die. You're an okay guy. And, you know, the whole room cheered because I'm not dead, you know? Like, this is a really great thing, and I'm just really glad it was part of my life.
Cool. We're glad you were, too. I'm telling you, some of the McNally does edits the majority, the vast majority of the Keith and the Girl TVs. KTGTV.com. You see those. Also working on the DVDs. He does the majority of my stand-up DVDs, the bonus features that you see on them, you know, all that. You'll see he's credited. We're very happy that, and not to put this last by any means, your friendship. And we're very happy that you were part of this.
You know what Keith told me downstairs? I was saying, like, hey, you're moving to a new studio. It's like the new version 2. You can change the name now. You should change the name. Come up with a new name for your podcast. And he's like, tell you what, we'll change it to Keith and the Girl, but I'm not going to tell anyone you're the new Keith. It's about you.
That was personal. It's the opposite of a secret.
I will say this about McNally. Very sweet guy. Just randomly out of the blue, like, when I first started doing this podcast, I told this guy that there was, like, some punk rock band from Cleveland that, I always wanted to get their CD, but I could never find it. This group called The Pagans, who had one CD from like the early 80s. And then like maybe like a year ago, out of nowhere, I get this email from McNally saying, "Say, hey, man, the Pagans, here's that CD you were talking
wow.
about. Just email me all the tracks out of the blue."
Wow, you guys were thieves together. That's so nice.
See, that's the other thing. I think that's why it's going to be slower to hit other people is because you guys, every day you do this, like, you know, it's easier to sort of take it for granted. But after I lived here, it was such an intense, like, you know, I was a fan of the show and then I was inside the show. And then after I moved back to Canada, I really fell back a lot. And, you know, I'd like, okay, Kyle's on the show, I'll listen to that. But it wasn't every day like it used to be. So I really fell out of remembering what this was all like. So to come back and remember... And to know it's the last day, you know, 1-2 punch.
I will say this too, also as well. I know it's your girl from now, Kat.
Yeah,
but
do you want her back? What do you want to do? You want to fight?
No.
Fight?
No.
How do we solve this?
Anyways, I'm gonna go on with what I was gonna say. But she was always a huge fan of McNally, as you know.
Really? That's not what she told me.
But she was always like. Very endearing to this guy right here. So, well-respected guy.
Well, I would spend a lot of time, you know, laying in bed in Canada, staring at the ceiling, wondering, like, why me and Hemda got in fights. Because right. I never thought we would, and it's weird that we did. I don't know. I think all I can chalk it up to is just, it is that nerd defense mechanism where, I don't know, just like...
You know she hates you, right?
Yeah.
That's cool. Well,
but I could win her over. I could do it.
What was it? Like, he said what it was, that... You didn't like that she was enjoying life, having fun? Like, I'm not joking.
I know that sounds ridiculous, but sure, yeah, if you really just want to boil it down, it's like, here's someone who's just happy and... Well, this is part of it. It's like, why I don't want to... Why I don't feel embarrassed to come on and be emotional. It's because I don't want to be closed off. I don't want to be that guy.
Right.
And if there's anyone who is, like, out there, it's Hemda, you know? She's, so...
You know, I... I have gotten that response from more than just McNally, where it's just like, why are you so okay, and why are you so happy, or whatever it was. I've gotten that response from other people, and always devastated me, because I actually work hard, and I, like, part of me doing that stuff is, like, part of my annoyance to you is to try to make you happy, and your... move easier into New York, and that annoyed you, and that devastated me. So I think that was...
My story for Hemda being as awesome and nice as she is we all know Lily. Do I have to go here with this?
Sure.
And I like Lily. She's a cool girl.
What's her name on the forums?
Falling Windows. You know, yeah, she's a really good writer. And I don't just say that because I hate everyone's writing. She really is.
She's a good artist, too. And she's cool. I mean, you know me. I smoke weed. She smokes weed. So whatever.
She has nice, firm tits.
But she was saying to me, this was a while ago. She goes, yeah, I don't get it. Hemda hates me.
I don't.
I was like, I know you don't. Like, I know you don't. And I tried explaining this to her. But I'm like, why? And I'm like, all right, well. All right, what's your story? Like, why do you say, every time she sees me, she's just so nice to me. She's just like,
what? Am I doing wrong?
I go, that's just fucking Hemda. I go, first of all, I know Hemda does not hate you, but I was like waiting for, all right, maybe there's something, but it's like, she's nice. Every time I see her, she's like, oh, hey, Lily, how are you? How are you doing? And she's like, I just can't stand that. And it's like, well, fucking Hemda says it to everybody. So apparently,
that's what I first thought when I met her. Yeah. I was like, this bitch is so fucking nice to me. What's her?
So apparently Hemda hates me too, because every time I see Hemda, she's always happy to see me. And I'm like, I was waiting for a reason. And
Lily's insecure.
I know that. And
that's my reason.
And I tell her that. And
I tell her that daily.
No, I've told her that. I don't see her all the time. But you get what I'm saying. It was, you're very genuine. You're very nice.
And but do I come off, maybe I come off fake.
No.
But I don't think I'm nice to everybody all the time. I think that's impossible. I think when people are nice to people all the time, it is fake. I do have my angry moment. I think I run the gamut on the emotions, I think. I think I just sort of learn to put it out there, but I don't think I'm mean with my niceness.
No.
That's so sad, by the way.
I think some girls figure if other girls are nice to them, they're being fake.
But I've gotten this from guys also. I was dating a guy who was like, you know what? Not everybody's always so happy and cheery. I'm like, fuck you, man. You have all the money in the world. I'm working 3 jobs, you know, and like I managed to be happy in my existence. And that's what you're getting down on me for. It's like, you know what? Maybe we shouldn't see each other anymore. Fuck.
You're going to hate me for saying this, but I also think that's the reason why you should have kids is because you, when I talk to you, like when I've been on the podcast months, you give me like life advice. Like I'll say a situation and you analyze it and it's like, wow, that's really close to what's going on. You get a very good perception for that.
It's creepy,
you know,
right?
You know that. Yeah, as you know. I'm sure Keith knows.
Yeah, you don't want to date that. It's eerie.
Have fun with that, Lauren.
I am.
I want you to know things I'll tell you. Yeah. The fuck is going on?
Don't worry about me.
So I should hop out and let Moody McCarthy take over, although good luck, Moody. You've seen Moody. But before I go, I just really want to apologize, Hemda, that we ever fought. And
I'm sorry that we fought, and I don't know. I think things
don't go
better.
Far, because I'm going to roll.
I'm going to go give Hemda a hug.
And, I'm telling you. Can I have Grand Theft Auto back?
That's all it was about, so he can keep the video game. He's like, I'll just get all mushy. And Keith won't ask me for that.
Arthur from Amsterdam is saying, McNally, that you are definitely one of my favorite guests, and even more so now, but with a question mark, so I don't know. I loved everything you've added to the show. Elvis is saying, whatever you guys do, don't stop doing the show. I have plans to get more Keith and the Girl tattoos. Just saying. I don't know where he has room, but I hope there's not confusion. Yeah, everything's still going on as planned. Slam Pokes, McNally, you're breaking my heart right now. Thanks for saying what I can't articulate. Much love. Elvis, again, you guys saved my life, literally, just saying.
Wow.
So there you go.
I will say this. I am also kind of endeared to McNally, because I remember when I first started doing the show, he goes, I can't stand any of the new guests except for Ray DeVito. That guy's all right. And I was like, you know what?
Let me just hop on for one more sec. Yeah. It's true. It's I used to always be disappointed when a show would start with a guest, because I always liked just the Keith and Hemda show's the best. Right. And then they would always win me over eventually. But Ray, especially once I moved here and got to know people, maybe it's just because he's very, very simple. But when you meet Ray on the show and off the show, he's exactly the same guy. Where a lot of people, they turn it on, they put on whatever their bullshit is. Never Ray. Like, Ray's just Ray, and I thought that was fantastic.
I bring nothing to the party.
This is it. I don't know if I like him because he's missing chromosomes. I don't know, but he's the same on and off, and I like it. It's refreshing.
See, wait, that was a good example. What was that all about? Why can't I just say something nice to Ray? Why do I got to do that?
Apparently, I was having sex with a man boy from Thailand. So
hey, we all did that.
Yes, who hasn't?
Just listening back to that, and we didn't listen in real time. We did tricks, but listening back, what a trip, McNally's.
You know, when McNally goes into his mode of really getting inside, you know, without any covers of anything, what an interesting guy that is. You know, he's relatable, he's funny, he's honest, and I think that's what makes his EXO shows really good. You know, I think that's why every time he's a guest, he's just like, his motto basically is you can't be a guest unless you're open, unless you're willing to share your life. And when he does that, it's so incredible to be around him and so incredible to listen to. And the apology that he said on the show, and you know what he talked about, and him crying and talking about that that we meant this much to him, and that's right. why he came down. You know, not just you know to. I mean, yes, to hang out, yes, to help out, but that he needed to see the studio for the last time. I teared up definitely during that segment. It meant so much to me, you know, because we're constantly going and going and going and what's the next step in Keith and the Girl and stuff like that. Sometimes I forget to go, look at this. We did this. You know, when we were unpacking, Keith showed me a shelf. He's like, you see that shelf? And it was CDs and DVDs that we had produced and performed on and put together. And we did that. And you said, look at that shelf. We did all that.
Right.
And that's incredible. And our 6-year anniversary is coming up this March of Keith and the Girl. And it, you know, if we were to put together a photo album of all of this, I think there's no way there would be no tears. It's incredible.
Here's a little behind the scenes about McNally. After that clip you heard about then.
Please don't ruin this for me.
I went downstairs to get a beverage and McNally's talking to Tech Andrew. And I just caught the end of it, but he says, yeah, so I started to tell my story about what this means to me. And then people started talking about, I guess Dan Mahoney started talking about how great New York is. Mm-hmm. And he goes, so I let him talk because politeness dictates.
Oh, can you? No,
and I'm like, oh my God. Good to have you back. This show, of course, brought to you by All For One Clothing, the brand that gives a voice to homeless shelter dogs. All For One donates a portion of every sale to animal shelters. If you would like to make a difference in the lives of shelter dogs, visit allforoneclothing.com. Use code KATG. Get 25% off your purchase. KeithandTheGirl.com.